The following is an interview with the founder and face of Seventh Level, Jeremy Miner. And what makes this interview different than most of the interviews that he does is we talk about things that even he says he doesn't usually talk about and in some cases has never talked about before. And while the first 10 to 15 minutes or so is definitely about sales, we talk about things like philosophy and why he named his company what he did and his reviews on religion and whether or not he's religious and the future of his company and life. Unfortunately, when we recorded this, we did not record it to our typical high-quality hard drives, so the video quality of this episode is less than ideal, but the content of the episode is really, really good, and I'm excited for you to go through and listen to this very unique perspective with someone who has made hundreds of millions of dollars and helped others make hundreds of millions, probably billions at this point, worth of dollars in his sales training company. So without further ado, let's cut over to the interview with founder and face of Seventh Level, Jeremy Miner. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. My name is Josh Forty, and today we have a very special guest, but not for the normal reason, all right? Well, first, this guy is the face of Seventh Level, which is cool, but he is also, according to my audience, because I asked you guys, the best-looking salesman in the world. So, with that, Jeremy, welcome to the show, and I've got to ask. I asked my audience, bro, I was like, what do we ask? And they said, listen, is there any hope for the rest of us for sales at all? Because we're not as good looking as you are.
I don't know if that really helped me when I was a salesperson. I actually wish I would I probably would have sold more had I, well, you know, I'm not going to say, is that what you say to every guest? So I have to ask you.
No, I'm dead serious. No, this is like
a tactic. I like it.
No, legit. Like I asked my, so I do like surveys and stuff like with bigger names. And I put it on Instagram and Facebook, and that comment came through, and I was like, yes, this is, yes. And Damon, well, that's where we met at Damon's party. Damon says, hi, and tell when he heard that, he's like, Jeremy has remarkable style. So listen, man, like you're good looking.
Well, you know, you make more sales, you typically can earn more money, and you can typically get better wardrobes, and you get better hairspray for your hair. So it's all about your sales ability, the skills you acquire, the more sales you make, you can get better hair. There you go.
Okay, so it has nothing to do with how good looking you are, is what you're saying.
Unfortunately not.
Unfortunately not
that good looking either. Here's the thing, like Nick, stop over there, our videographer. He's like, I'm getting out of here, man. I'm gonna throw up too in there. Don't tell anybody in there in the office. No, I mean, you know, I really feel that now if you're, you know, this, but let me give you two scenarios.
Okay.
It's a man. Being more good looking actually hurts you because I think a lot of prospects have their guard up a little bit more. Now I think as a woman, it hurts you. The more good looking you are, it can help and hurt you. Now let me want to reference this. If you're really, really good looking as a woman, if you don't have the right sales ability, men, if you're talking to men, they will take advantage of you because they just start flirting with you and they don't take you seriously. Now you get a woman that acquires the right sales ability and skills, she'll crush everybody else.
Yeah.
She's already attracted her a good look, so they open up. But now she has the sales ability, she's going to dominate. But as a male, the more good looking you are, you have to really work on getting people to let their guard down. I think their guard's up a little bit more.
All right. So you had your work cut out for you, apparently.
I had to learn more advanced skills.
I guess so.
To do
it. Okay. So if it's not good looks, then like what makes you, and like, I'm asking this genuinely, like what makes you so much better than everybody else? Cause like, it's not a secret that you know what you're doing, right? Like the results, they speak for themselves. And like anyone, you watch your content, whether it's paid or free, you're incredibly knowledgeable. What makes you and your process so much better than everybody else?
I mean, that's not up for me to say. That's what, you know, I let the world judge that. It's kind of like, you know, if you're like this football player, like, I don't even want to say Tom Brady.
Bro, he's the GOAT. He's
somebody like that. You don't hear Tom Brady like, oh, I'm the number one, this, I'm the best quarterback in the world. Like, you just don't hear that. It's
yeah, but in an interview you do, he was with Patrick Bet-David and they asked him, right? Like, what made you such a good leader? And he said it. So
what did he say? What did he say?
He said, oh gosh, word for word.
I don't remember word for word, but he said that he genuinely cared about like his people and wanted to see every single one of them win. He hated every, hold on. He hated every person on every other person's team. He didn't want to be friends with anybody else on the opposite team because he wanted to walk out on the field and like hate their guts. Yeah. So I don't know, maybe some BS answers.
Never heard him in an interview on ESPN like, oh, I'm the number one quarterback in the world. I'm the best there ever was. You don't hear that, right? You typically hear that from people who maybe are not so secure in themselves, right? So I never want to say that because it's up to the world to judge. But what our clients, I know I'm weird. What our clients would say that our training does better than maybe others that they've gone through is, you know, we learn techniques that work with human behavior. We learn how to get the prospects to let their guard down and emotionally open up with the right questions, with the right tone. Now, that's a basic overview. There's a lot of skill that goes into that. But instead of like using techniques that, you know, because I think most of us, you know, when I first got into sales, I was trained that, you know, you got to do all the work, you got to do all the selling, you got to, you know, follow up and do all the chasing. You got to overcome their objections with rebuttals. You got to close. You got to push and pressure. And that will only get you to a certain level. It will, because you're going to trigger sales resistance using techniques like that. Cause your prospects feel like it's you against them. Like it's you against them, trying to manipulate them, trying to win them over so you can make money. That is what average salespeople think like. Okay. You want to be a top 1% earner in any industry. I don't care what it is. Or if you're a company and you're wanting to scale and be like the best in the market or an individual, you have to learn how to get your prospects to do all the work. You have to learn how to get the prospect to sell themselves. You have to learn how to get the prospect to overcome their own concerns. You have to get the prospect to pull you in, okay? Because if you really think about it, Josh, who has the problems? You or the prospect?
The prospect.
Prospect.
Yeah.
Who has the solution to solve those problems? You.
You do, yeah.
Start thinking differently about what selling is and put yourself in a position and understand like how to raise your status in the prospect's mind where they view you as the expert, as the trusted authority who's going to get them the best result, where it's almost like when they buy from you. And this was like when I figured this out as a young salesperson, you know, we'll talk about how I figured this out.
Yeah,
I'm still figuring out myself. Like everybody's like, oh, you guys are doing so good. I'm like, I'm still learning how to do this.
Yeah.
I'm still learning. I'm a student every day. But when you learn how to do this, quite literally, your prospects will thank you for allowing them to pay you money to get them where they want to be. They don't feel like they were sold. It's almost like they feel like they're selling you on them paying you to get them where they want to be. And it's just a different positioning. You know, we call that, you know, it's called in social dynamics. So I went to school for behavioral science and social dynamics. And in social dynamics, you really learn a concept that's called rank framing. Okay. Have you ever read a book by, what's his name? He's in the kind of the capital raising space, Oren
Claff.
Picture anything. So, he's really one of the only sales trainers. I don't even know if he'd call himself a sales trainer, but he's really the only one of the, and I've read like 1300 some books on sales persuasion for the last 23 years. He's really the only one of them that even understands social dynamics. And because when you go through social dynamics, you learn the concept of what's called rank framing or status framing.
Yeah. He talks about it in Pitch Anything, right?
Yeah, that book.
That's
exactly the book.
Good book.
We talk about status framing. In social dynamics, they call it rank framing. You probably just changed the word or whatever.
Okay.
But rank framing has been since the dawn of mankind, whether that's been 10,000 years, 3 billion years. I don't know. I don't know when God put the first people on here. We're going through cycles. I'm trying to figure it out myself. I'm watching Ancient Aliens every Friday night trying to figure all this out. I'm joking. But what he talks about is, you know, even in, let's say, 2,000 years ago, let's say if I'm on the Polynesian Islands, as an example, how did anybody view my status or my rank in society? Well, in that culture, they would view it based on the tattoos that I wore. That would tell them what my rank was or my status.
Yeah.
In medieval times, let's say European history, how did they view your status? Well, if you were a king or a queen or a lord or those type of things, that's how your status was there. Now, how do they view salespeople in society in our day? What type of status?
I mean, higher if you make more money, right?
No, they view, even if you make a lot of money, how does society view salespeople in general? Just think about
it. Okay, well, society in general, negative, but me, I'm like, I love salespeople.
Well,
like,
you do because your business, you're interviewing stuff. But if I'm looking in society.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Right? Hollywood, how do they depict salespeople? Like high status, like, oh, you know.
Yeah, no.
It's not like
Slimy.
An elementary. Yeah, it's not like an elementary school. Not like you go to elementary school and the teacher's like, hey, one day. You should grow up and be a salesperson.
Yeah, right.
You know, like nobody, you could make $1 million a year as a salesperson and people are just like, oh, lower status. He's going to try to sell me something, right?
Yeah.
So how do you learn how to get the prospect? Because when you come into that sales conversation, whether it's on the phone, whether it's on in person, whether it's on Zoom like this, when you come into that conversation, you have to understand the right words, the right tone to use, where the prospect instantly views you at least as the same status as them right at the start of that conversation.
Yeah.
As you go throughout that conversation, through the questions you ask, how you use your tone to get them to emotionally open up, you start to have to get them to view you at a much higher status in what you're talking about than they are.
Mm.
When they view you at that type of high status, they trust that you can get them the best result. Unfortunately, the way most sales training teaches you is automatically like they don't even teach you tonality. That's one problem. That, you know, start off really excited, you know, like every salesperson that sells anything. So the prospect's brain, their survival part of their brain goes into fight or flight mode. Everybody's hurt. Nobody understands what's triggering that. See,
and one of the most fascinating videos of you that I watched probably 20 times when I saw it, because I was like, this is so good, was when you did the confused, when you door-to-door sales, it was like the confused guy with the construction vest on or whatever.
We called it the confused old man. It's just a
confused old man. Yeah.
It's a pattern interrupt.
I was like, that is so, so good. Yep. Right.
You want to, we'll talk about this for a second and we'll go back to that, you know, like how do you use pattern interrupts by using a confused tone, especially if you cold call?
Yeah.
Because I'll do a reel on that. Now, in our client virtual training portals and all that stuff, it's far more advanced than a student.
Yeah, right. Right.
Reels are basic, right?
They're the worst, but
it's like, you know, people on, I did a really big reel on acting confused and cold calling. And I like half the people are like, well, this is brilliant. The other half, you know, big egos, right? They're like,
right.
This would never work. You can't act confused. You got to show them that you're the expert. And I'm like,
right,
that's why you're not making any money.
Yeah.
Because all the other salespeople, hi, my name is, I'm with XYZ company. And hey, the reason why I called was click, not interested. We don't need it. We already have somebody for that. So yeah, your expertise is triggering sales resistance because you sound like everybody else cold calling them every freaking day. But when I'm acting in a way, there's certain parts of the sales process, you're almost acting confused. And what that does in their brain is it triggers them to become curious about what's going on and engage back with you. So I'll give you an example of even a confused tone. Then let's go back to that other subject because that was interesting.
Yeah.
So with a confused tone, so let's say, and I'll show you the five different types of tone that you have to master if you want to be great at sales. So with a confused tone, let's say a prospect says, oh my gosh, you know, in that conversation, like I'm having this problem with, and it's caused me to, there's a lot of pressure at work right now. Let's say if you're selling for a marketing agency,
you're talking
to a VP of marketing. I'm just going to throw that out.
Yeah.
They're having problems with leads. A lot of the leads they salespeople call, they can't get a hold of, causing some issues. He might lose his job now. So he's like, oh, there's a lot of tension right now because some of us are, you know, in trouble with the boss because these leads, people aren't coming. So I'm like, hold on. You're in trouble with the boss? What's going on? Mm. See, that's a confused tone. Now, when I have that confused tone, what triggers me to be able to have a confused tone? My facial expression. See, I always say your facial expressions are the remote control to your tone. I can't have a confused tone unless my face expression shows that. Try having a confused tone right now with a straight face.
Yeah, what the heck? That's so crazy. Huh, interesting.
Try having a challenging tone or a skeptical tone with a straight face.
Straight face. Interesting.
Can't do it.
Yeah, like, like whole face changes. That's, yeah, interesting.
You can't do it. Your facial expression is the remote control to your sound of your tone, okay?
Okay.
So it's one of the biggest things they teach you when you go into acting school. We can go into that in a second. This is where I learned tonality. So when you get in there, back to where we were going. I'm all lost now.
You're good. You're good. You were talking
tone.
It was before the tone. You were talking about status.
Okay.
And yeah, the levels of status. I'm curious. Can I do one question prior?
Yes, you can.
Set this up.
I'm going to turn the AC back on.
Okay, cool. You're good.
You got to realize our corporate headquarters are here in Scottsdale.
Even though
it's November,
oh my,
still like 81 degrees.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, it's a little bit, these lights on here, a little bit warm in here today. All right, go back to the question.
I have a question about the actual structure of how you do things you said something about like getting into like the tones and the five different things. I do want to get to that. But one of the questions, because I've talked to quite a few people about just you and the way that you structure your programs and stuff as a, like just with questions about it, because when I talk to people, maybe traditional sales programs, and without naming any names, you know, some of the bigger ones in the industry versus yours, there's a overwhelmingly positive ring that goes with yours, right? With feedback of like how it's structured, how you teach, and how you communicate things effectively. You're dealing with psychology and with, you know, like things that are probably relatively difficult to it's not like you're just handing people a script and saying just say the right words, right? Like
you're gonna sound like a telemarketer and your prospect,
right?
Gonna shut down emotionally, yeah, because you sound scripted,
right? As someone who I've been in the online education space for a while, I've dealt with a lot of people with a lot of programs. How have you figured out how to deliver what you do in a way that's as effective as it is for your clients? Because people do speak very highly of this stuff. I've gone through some of your stuff as well. How do you structure those, or how did you figure that piece out from the actual business side of things?
Yeah. So my, like I said, my background in college is behavioral science and social dynamics. So if I really want to peel back the layers of what that means, it's the study of the brain and how human beings make decisions and how they retain information.
Okay.
So I have a background in it, so I probably have an advantage over probably other sales trainers, I would say, because I understand how people retain it or not retain it. You mean to show you something interesting?
Yeah, I would love that.
I was actually just on a podcast with the CEO of Selling Power magazine, like literally right before this, and we were talking about this. It's quite interesting. So a lot of, we were even talking about tone there. So a lot of sales trainers, so we train, you know, obviously we train a lot of companies in your industry, like the online industry, but we train 161 other industries besides that. Okay.
Okay.
So a lot of companies, you know, like ExxonMobil is a client.
Yeah.
You know, United Healthcare, second largest health insurance provider. Some big clients, small clients.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's all over the board. But a lot of companies will come to us and they'll be like, hey, you know, Jeremy, we want you or one of your sales trainers to, you know, to come in and do a workshop for us.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
All day workshop.
Yep.
You know, we want to triple revenue the next year. I'm like, we can come in and do a 2-day workshop, no problem. But it just depends on what type of result you actually want for the year, because our reps, you know, we train them to say this, like, are you aware how much your salespeople are going to remember of what Jeremy trains them after 2 days? And they're like, no, what do you mean? Well, the way the brain works, within 48 hours of you going to like a workshop or an in-person event, your brain on average will only remember 19% of that within two days.
Wow.
So that means your salespeople have already forgotten 81% of what you train them. Even if it was like an eight hour freaking
crazy
workshop.
Okay. Yeah.
Within 7 days, it gets worse. It's 9.6% they're going to retain. Within 30 days, it's 3.1%. Hard to triple revenue if
they're
going to forget 97% of what was trained on.
Yeah.
Within 30 days, right? So you have to have virtual training platforms. So the way our programs are structured is, you know, because we started a little bit before COVID, right? So we had already had all of our programs on virtual training platforms. Our biggest one, which is like a 47-hour course, is with Lightspeed Virtual Training with Brad Lee.
Okay, yeah.
We have other smaller versions for other stuff in Kajabi and other stuff like that. That might be 4 hours or 10 hours, or it just depends on the industries and stuff. So you have to couple that, not just a virtual training platform, because a virtual training platform is only going to give you enough. Like if I taught everything that I knew that you needed to do to like become a top 1% earner in any industry, you're talking like a 10,000 plus hour course.
I mean, it's not realistic.
Like if I taught all the nuances.
Yeah. Yep.
If you ask this consequence question, if they say this, you have to ask that. And then if they say this, you need to say this statement and then ask that. I mean, like literally every, there's so many nuances.
Yeah.
So you have to go through a virtual training platform like constantly. You know, we call it train to retain, train to retain. Okay. Like, you know, my good friend, you've met Brad Lee. Have you been on his podcast or anything?
I have not been on his podcast. We met very briefly at an event one time, but I don't like know him.
His motto is, you know, is training something you did or is training something you do? It's something
interesting. Daily. Yeah, that's good.
If you're a company or a salesperson, if you want to become the best, it's something you have to train to do daily. Because look at pro athletes, look at Hollywood actors and actresses, look at neurosurgeons, look at CEOs. Yeah. Is training something they did once a long time ago, or is it something they do almost daily? That's why they're the best, because they do it. Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Practice 3-pointers every day or just once a year.
Yeah.
Just be real, right? Does Julia Roberts practice acting once a year or right when she goes on camera? No, she's practicing every freaking day, her tone, her body language, all that stuff, right? So you want to become the best, you have to train every day, okay? Whether that's 20, 30, 45 minutes while you're driving around, whatever, okay? So you want to retain stuff, you have to go through virtual training daily, 15, 20, 30 minutes. A lot of people, I don't have time. Well, what do you listen to when you drive around your car?
Yeah.
Oh, Taylor Swift. Oh, okay. you know, AC/DC or
college. ESPN.
ESPN. How much money is that making you every month? Oh, bagels. Nothing.
Yep.
So use your vehicle as a university on wheels, as my good friend Brian Tracy would say. So you start learning 20, 30, you know, driving here 10 minutes, driving here 5 minutes. You got five. You don't have to get up at 3 a.m. and drink coffee to get on your computer and to watch 2 hours of sales training. You quite literally are wasting that time doing nothing during the day, walking around, or you're ironing your shirt for 4 minutes. What are you listening to for that 4 minutes? Or eating breakfast for 10? What are you listening to? 4 minutes here, 10 minutes, 12 minutes. 40, you know, 20 minutes. Now you got an hour a day. You do that 7 days a week, month after month, year after year after year. It's impossible for you not to become the best. Like people always ask me, Jeremy, how did you make so much money as a salesperson? And how did you do that in four completely different industries?
Yep.
My simple answer, I outlearned everybody else.
Mm.
That was my secret sauce, quite literally. Okay. So anyways, going back, hope that answered your question.
No, that
does. You want to have a combination of that stuff.
No, that makes sense.
In group training, like we have sales trainers all over the world, group training, you know, clients, there's one training program, we have 57 training calls a week. Now, that's, you don't attend 57 training calls a week, but we have sales trainers in all different time zones, different parts of the world, because we have clients everywhere.
Yeah.
Jump into the ones that they need the most help in, like advanced tonality, advanced objection prevention, advanced objection handling, body language, you know, advanced questioning. So they're going to jump into the ones they're not understanding. And that's where they're going to get the nuances from myself and our sales trainers, plus the virtual training course. You have to have a combination.
Got it. Okay. I got a question. One of the things that I ask people about a lot, and the audience loves it as well, is, say, backstory, like how we kind of got into this, but with a twist, which is I've found that people at a very high level, someone that's operating at, you know, a level like yours, they're usually driven by something, right? And I've found that it is almost like either immense pain, right? Not feeling like they're enough, like something of that nature, or they had a great mentor, inspiration, right? They were around, you know, the right people in that setting. You've achieved a level, and like, I know what you're going to, like, I know how you want
I'm really
to perceive
not that
you. I get
cool,
it.
But
I
go, thank
okay.
you very
okay.
Much.
You're not cool. You're not cool. That's fine. You can say whatever you want to say. Right. But like just you to me for a second. Right. Like I'm asking this almost for me because I'm fascinated. I'm inspired by people that operate at a high level because like as I level up in business and you know, the people that I get around, I'm like, oh, it's all here, right? Like it's all just rewiring and operating and performing at these levels. And there's gotta be a driving factor behind those things, right? So like what drives you? Like take us back to what drove you to be, I mean, first you were the best in any of these sales. Now you were like, you could have just stayed there. Now you went and built this company. And now you're pushing, you know, past $100 million and beyond. What drives that? How do you operate in that setting? Yeah.
I'm a really weird dude. The answer might be like, oh, what? That's so weird. So let me ask you this question. I don't know most people never ask me this question. And I understand why. What do you feel is behind why would I call the company Seventh Level? You ever thought about that? What does that even mean?
I don't know. Most people never ask you it. So Jeremy,
why did you call your company Seventh Level? Yeah. So like I said, I love philosophy. I love history and philosophy. I'm just, I'm totally cool with on a Saturday night setting in my study at home and reading a book by some philosopher about, you know, social dynamics in the 1960s.
Same.
I'm just a weird dude.
No, that is
do that anything. I'm fascinated, right?
Yep.
So Seventh Level. So go back to my college days. So behavioral science, social dynamics, but I also took a lot of classes in world religions. I'm fascinated by why people believe different things in society at large.
Yep.
All the way back from.
Dude, it sounds like we have very similar things that we study. If you go down and look at my bookshelf, it's religion and philosophy, right? Like
very interesting, right?
Yeah.
So what I found is like studying every world religion. So I'm talking about not just religion today, because it's very different. Like, you know, one thing that I really studied was ancient Christianity compared to what Christians believe today.
Yep.
Quite remarkably different, I will tell you. Okay.
Yeah.
There's still some core beliefs about Christ and those type of things, but it is a lot different, I will tell you. So what did the earliest Christians believe from like the times of Christ till like the rise of like the Roman Catholic faith? I mean, there's like a 300 year period in there. That's a lot of years. I mean, 300 years is like before the Revolutionary War.
Yeah.
Compared to our dad, it's like times have changed, right? What did the earliest Christians believe? What did, ancient Judaism believe? What did, Islam believe at the start? What did even, like, I'm talking about religions back into like ancient Mesopotamia. Like, what did they actually believe compared to what beliefs are now?
Yeah.
The one core thing, there were some other things that they all believed in, like one, but there's this one core thing that all the major religions, ancient religions, I'm not talking about how it's structured today. Some of them still believe this, but most of them don't.
Yeah.
The one core thing that they all universally shared is that there were seven levels of heaven. It's crazy. If you Google this, it's quite interesting. There's seven levels of heaven. I'm not kidding. And God dwelt at the highest level. He dwelt at the seventh level. And in order for you to become perfected like he is, to attain what he has, you know, you have to keep the commandments. You have to, you know, repent. You have to do good. And like you move up these different levels of heaven based on, you know, how you were as a person. Now, obviously, the atonement of Jesus Christ comes in that, you know, but it's like that's why you're judged by your works, right? So they all believe that there were different levels of heaven, not just one heaven and one hell.
Yep.
Literally, every religion, seven levels. So in order to become perfected in God, you had to, is that the seventh level where he dwelt, okay? And if you didn't make it to that seventh level, it was like a hell to you because you realized what you could have attained had you just been a better person in this lifetime. It wasn't like a fire and brimstone with a pitchfork. It was hell was just a separation from God, knowing that you could have been there had you just been a better person, right? And so when I look at sales and I look at communication, we talk about becoming perfected as a communicator. That's why, hence, the term seventh level. Okay. That's where it comes from. Because communication to me is far more than just sales training to sell products, services to help people. Communication to me has been around since the history of the world began, whenever that was. Like if you if you read the Bible, what we have is the Bible. There's tons of stuff in the Bible. If you really study ancient religions, like there's most of the Bible's not even there, but that's a whole other story. So in the beginning, there was a a war in heaven. Now everybody talks about the war in heaven. You can I can go to a Baptist church, a Pentecostal church, Catholic church. I can go to the an LDS church. I can go to any type of church. They're always going to talk about the war in heaven. But does anybody really think about what that meant? A war in heaven, was that a war where they like shot each other with guns, sword fights and tanks? Nobody thinks about that. No, it was not any of that. It was a war of persuasion. It was a war of influence. It was two competing ideas. One was Satan, who was the son of the son of the morning, as the Old Testament talks about. And there was God's plan. And there, it was a war of persuasion. People, you know, spirits or whatever, were persuading each other to accept one of those plans, right? So communication, it's been here since the dawn of age. And so it means something much bigger than just selling stuff. It means like communication breakdowns are what causes wars. What's the biggest reason why people go to war? A lack of communication.
Yeah, a lack of communication between
a lack of understanding. You know, the USA believes that Russia's evil and horrible, whereas Russia, if you talk to them, they believe that, you know, NATO and stuff, and I'm not a politics person. I'm trying to understand both sides. Like Stephen R. Covey, first seek to understand and then be understood. Countries, for some reason, haven't figured that out. Our leaders in every country, they just, I'm right, everybody else is wrong. I don't want to try to understand why anybody feels anything. But if you talk to them on the Russia side, well, they're concerned that NATO's putting all these military bases and nuclear weapons on their borders. So they feel insecure. Even they feel like, oh, United States is saying this, but they're doing all this. So they lash out. But the United States is like, they're evil. They're trying to do this, blah, 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 blah. Now, somebody might be more right than wrong, right? That's not for me to judge. But I at least want to understand the other point of view and the other way of thinking, because if they feel like I'm trying to understand where they're coming from, guess what they do? They try to understand where I'm coming from. And when you do that, you typically compromise and you don't have wars. So to me, it's far more than just sales and sales training. It's about communication, you know, in a marriage. It's about communication with your kids. It's about, you know, society breaking down because of lack of communication. It's about wars starting or not starting because of communication. Communication is, I mean, it it runs society either positive or negative.
Yeah, 100% agree. And it's interesting. It sounds like religion slash philosophy, and I don't mean maybe that, better put, the study of religion and philosophy has played a large role in not only your company, but your life.
It still does.
Yeah.
It still does. I'm so, still a student of the ball game. I always say there's levels to this ball game of sales. You just have to decide which level you want to play at, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Based on your skill level you learn.
So like, how has that affected, I don't know much about, like, I know not much about your personal life or, you know, how you structure things. I'm sure you work a lot because you love work, right? But how has that affected, I guess, would you consider yourself a religious person, or how would you categorize yourself there? And then how has that affected your decisions? Obviously, it affected the naming of your company, but on a daily basis, like, how does that affect your life?
Yeah, I mean, it's a driving force for me. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I don't go all the time. I probably should go more. Sometimes I get bored, you know, I just, you know, but I love studying different religions. Like I've gone to like the Greek Orthodox Church in Europe and Eastern Orthodox faith. And I've been to like the Roman Catholic faith over in Europe. Cause I love like the history of the buildings and the cathedrals and stuff. But I think every religion has truth in it, obviously.
Right? Yeah, for sure.
But for me, I love studying that. And I do go to church. I go to church here and there. I probably should go more.
Well, yeah. Well, let me, I'm curious about that. It's interesting you say that because, people I have found, at least for me, and I'm perhaps it's true for you as well. It's like when you said, like, sometimes they get bored, right? I'm like, yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, I relate to that so much because, like, I mean, I was in church all through life and growing up as a kid and all the things. Right. But I did, I got bored. And, like, you would want to ask questions and it was the same cookie cutter stuff. Thankfully, I have a really, really awesome church now that I go to with the pastor who's a lot of similar thinking. But, like, why do you think that is? And, like, do you think that the church or maybe not the church, but do you think that, like, religious leaders, if you will, could do a better job of actually, like, I don't want to say like people in business can surpass, but like you read like Napoleon Hill and you read some of these, you know, personal development stuff and great leaders or whatever. And it's like wisdom and growing and knowledge. It seems that like the church or religious leaders can kind of put a cap on what they teach right?
I feel like, I mean, I hate to be real, but like when you really study.
No, please do.
I have a couple of friends that are pretty big biblical scholars and they'll tell you the same thing. When they really study the history of the Bible, they're just like, what most of these pastors and leaders are teaching just ain't so. Like it's quite literally not how the earliest Christians even believed. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, you talk about like the doctrine of the Trinity. Right. And I have no opinions of whatever you believe in the Trinity. Right. Don't believe in, yep. I don't care. I'm just showing you like what the earliest Christians believed in compared to what they believe in now. There was no such thing as the Trinity until the year 325 AD at the Council of Nicaea. I mean, you just go Council of Nicaea. Yeah. Quite literally, Constantine, who was a pagan sun worshiper, who was trying to unify his crumbling Roman Empire. Quite literally, there was all these divisions in the Christian faith. So after the apostles were killed off the scene, Christianity fragmented. There was the Ethiopian Christians believed in this, and the Christians in Macedonia had this belief, and these Christians believed this. And there was one group, I think, I can't remember, they're called the Arians, or it's a couple, I'd have to go back and look at it. But there was one group that started, you know, they believed in the writings of like Plato, where Plato, a Greek philosopher, taught that God was like a mystical, you know, spiritual, like he could be sitting on a throne, but he could be as small to be in your heart. And then they would take a text, you know, that they had where it says, you know, God, like in John 4:24, where it says, God is a spirit and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. Well, any biblical scholar will tell you that the New Testament that was translated from, you know, Greek, there is no indefinite a or an article in the Greek language. Like the word a or an does not exist. Like that's not a thing. So when the King James translators translated that, because they believed that God was some mystical being, you know, like all over the place, they put in God is a, instead of what the Greek version said, God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. To worship God, you don't have to leave your body to worship God, right? God is also light, and God is also love. Those are his attributes. The earliest Christians quite believed that God was not some spiritual essence. You know, in the Old Testament, it talks about Moses saw his face and his back parts and his arms and all this stuff. So when you see the earliest paintings of God in Europe, you've been to Europe in the cathedrals, how did they paint God? In like a human form. Quite literally, that is what the earliest Christians believe.
All over,
not a mortal man that can die, but someone who's immortal. Like Jesus Christ himself was resurrected with a body of flesh and bones, right? He ascended into heaven with that same body. That's how they depicted God the Father. So I'm just saying, like, early Christians believed in different things now. Now, am I, whether that's right or wrong or whatever,
right, no.
God is God going to punish you at the end of the day because maybe you believed that he was this compared to this?
I know.
Because he loves all of us. We're all his children. And I'm not saying I'm 100% right. I'm just saying this.
No,
is what
I understand.
Believed.
For sure. And it's very interesting. It's fascinating. And I think without even realizing it, I think this probably is part of the reason I was very attracted to like your style of just like teaching and with sales and with language communication and things, because like, it is interesting how the more you study philosophy and how different things were translated and communicated or whatever, the better you do understand, it seems, how people make decisions and how they communicate and who we are. And the more you understand people and all that, and obviously religion plays a huge role in that,
yeah,
right?
In all society. So,
yeah.
I love every religion. In my mind, like, every religion is teaching truth, so, you know, just different.
Interesting.
Truths. Yeah. But those truths sometimes have morphed over the years.
Hundreds for sure.
Of years. Yeah.
Yeah. So, kind of coming back around then, bringing this back to the whole business conversation with this, like, you're fascinated with philosophy and religion. What's the vision of where you're going? You've got this company that's scaling with clearly something you're passionate about and learning and skilled with, and the philosophy and the religion part that's a big driving force in all of this. Like, what's the 10, 20 year vision of down the road of where we're headed with Seventh Level and just with life, I guess?
I mean, business, then I'll go over personal. So
perfect, yeah.
Business, like, as a company, we are far more concerned about the brand reputation. And I know a lot of people will say this, but I'm in some masterminds with people that say it, but I'm like, you're just saying that because it sounds good, but you're not doing that. I just can't tell by what you're doing. But in our mind, like, we are far more concerned about getting clients the results they paid for, even if we have to slow down the growth of the company, than just making a bunch of money. Why is that? Because we're not a brand. Like, I know you're in the education space, in the high ticket space, kind of, you know, and what the weakness I see in that industry, there's a lot of strengths.
Yep.
One of the biggest weaknesses I've noticed is that a lot of those people who create coaching programs or training programs, it's like, they'll do it for a couple years and they go under, or they'll do it for a couple years and they're at the top. And then they're like, oh, I'm just really depressed. You know, I've always wanted to do this. I'm going to switch. Now I'm doing this, you know? And it's just like, there's no consistency. That's not a brand. And what about all that? What about all your clients?
Yeah.
You're depressed now, so you're just going to close it up and start some new offer? Like, what the hell is going on? Like, what were you thinking? So I see a lot of amateurs that were good at what they did. They might have had a couple years experience, and now I'm going to create a coaching course and teach people how to do this when you have 2 years of experience. I mean, let me tell everybody, I was in the trenches of sales almost 18 years as one of the top 50 salespeople in the entire world in any industry, ranked. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's what I was ranked, you know, direct selling association, all that stuff. You're talking about hundreds of millions of salespeople with the amount of money I made per year as a W-2 or 1099. And even after all that success, 18 years, tens of thousands of hours, and all that knowledge, I mean, that doesn't translate into a successful long-term business. It gives you a good start. But I have the understanding of the different industries. I have more of the wisdom. Like, if I see so many sales trainers, they sell for 1 or 2 years, like, oh, now I'm going to be a sales trainer. I'm like, dude, if I would have started after a year or two, even be the number one person in my industry after 2 years, there's no way I'd be where I'm at, because I wouldn't have enough knowledge. I wouldn't have enough wisdom or ins and outs. There's truth when they say to become an expert, you have to have at least 10,000 hours. I would say you have to have a lot more than that in my mind. So I just see so many amateurs that get in that are good, but they're never going to be great because they didn't put enough time into their profession to really be at the top. So for us, it's all about fulfillment. So if we, you know, this year we've grown so fast over the last 3 years, especially the last 2 years, and especially even the last year.
Yeah, it's been impressive. Yeah.
That we have, like, this year, even last year we grew over 400-some%. The year before was like 1,700%. The year before was like 3,000%. But that was starting from nothing 3 years ago. What I'm saying is, like, this year we're like, okay, we're purposely going to slow our growth down where we only grow by 40% the entire year, because we have 150 some people on staff right now. I think a year ago we had maybe 60. The year before that was like 20. The year before that was 2, me and my assistant. So when you grow that fast, a lot of people are like, oh, you're growing so fast, you're raking in the dough, you're doing all this stuff. Not necessarily. When you grow that fast, you're quite literally throwing bodies into positions that probably should not be there.
Yeah. Right? Interesting.
Experience. Like, oh, yeah. You're one of our average salespeople. You might be good at operations. You seem analytical. Why don't you be this?
Yeah.
That's what most people do in that space. So this year, you know, we've got really good people in different parts, but there's a few places where we threw bodies in the beginning that we're having to bring in far more skilled people. Like we brought in a CFO from billboard.com, paying him tons of money. We brought him like 6 months ago, but he has saved us tons of money in taxes and just budgeting and stuff like that. So now we're bringing in more high level people.
Yeah.
Which cost us a lot more, purposely slowing down our growth to plug in any holes. And then we'll start scaling again in 2025. So you have to, as a business owner, you have to think about these things. Now, did I think about that? No, I don't have the savviness to understand that. My CEO and business partner, Matt Ryder, does, you know, and the people that we brought in to like, you know, train him and our staff really had to understand that come from like huge corporations. Cause we have people on our board that we pay a lot of money to train our CEO and our COO and CFO, these type of things.
Yep.
You have to have that if you're really serious.
Yeah.
A real company that's here in 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, 50 years.
So, and what does that look like to 5 or 10 years down the road? I mean, it's just build the bail. I don't want to say the biggest, but like just continue to build the sales education.
Yeah. And some other parts. So we, you know, selling, are you familiar with like Selling Power magazine?
Yep.
Yeah. So Selling Power magazine, they're the largest, and I'm not just saying that, they've been around since like 1981, but they're the largest like sales training magazine or publication in the world. Okay.
Okay.
I just got off their podcast with them again. And Gerhard, their CEO. So what they do is every year they rank the top 20 sales training companies in the entire world.
Oh, wow.
So we're not talking about like sales trainers and like the education.
Yeah. Florida or Scottsdale.
We're,
right?
Yeah, we're talking about the top sales training companies in the entire world. You're competing with companies in Sweden to UK to everywhere in the world, Singapore, everything. And they base it on like company revenue. Cause you have to submit all that. You have to prove it with your financials, you know, certified, and then your client results. Well, last year we were already ranked in the top 20.
Wow. Congratulations.
Now,
that's awesome.
They give you like 1 through 20. They just say, here are the top 20. So when I talked to him, I tell him the secret, he's like, based on your revenue and based just on revenue alone, you're actually about 8th or 9th in the entire world right now. Now that's after about 3.5 or about 4 years. Okay. Every company that made that list in the top 20, the average company has been in business for about 27 years.
Wow.
The top three, one of them has started in 1969.
Wow.
So, you know, we're getting there. So our goal is to eventually overtake that number one spot. And that's really in our minds based on clients' results, right? We have 18,000 plus testimonials right now. I don't know of any other sales training company that even has a third.
Crazy. Right. You know, and I think like that speaks 10, to your 18 you know? Years though, right? Like you said, it's like 18 years of experience. So it's like, yeah, you only have 3 years in the business, but it's like, but also there's 18 years prior of, you know, being
it's
the best.
One thing to have those type of sales results that you had, but it's another thing to understand how to teach it and duplicate in every industry.
Yep.
So with our sales methodology in EPQ, when we go into any industry, and it's the same way when I went into an industry, I sold in 2 B2B industries and 2 B2C, completely all different. How did I do that? It was very easy. So what I would do is when I'd go in for an interview by the company recruiting me, I usually would get interviewed by the chief sales officer. Okay. I would ask them, what are the 4 to 5 biggest problems that your prospects have? Now, they couldn't answer that, which some big companies don't even know.
So nuts that they don't.
It's really scary. Yeah. You know, they're like, oh, they want to make more money. I'm like, no, that's not the problem. That's the result. That's not the problem.
Yeah.
The problem is what's preventing them. So I'd ask them, what's the top 4 to 5 biggest problems that prospects have? Then the next part of the formula that I had to have is, what are the consequences of each one of those problems? Like they have this problem, what's the consequence if that doesn't get solved? Once I understood those two things, then I would ask, how does your solution solve this problem, this problem, this problem, and this problem? Once I understood those three data points, then I would go back, and it was very easy to write the sales structure around that, from what we call connection questions. It takes the focus off you, puts it on them, gets them to let their guard down. That's inbound, outbound leads. That's cold calling. That's everything. That's door-to-door, any industry. Then how do we help them find out what their real situation is? That's their situation questions. How do we then start to build a gap from where they are to where they want to be? We call those problem awareness questions. And then not only do you have to help them find problems they didn't realize they had, but you have to get them, that's part of the equation, you have to get them really importantly to see what the future looks like once the newfound problems are solved. Those are called solution awareness questions.
Yeah.
And then once they feel what it's going to feel like and they see what,
it's
when
game
those problems
over,
are gone, they get what they want, we rip that away with what are called consequence questions that gets them to defend themselves on why they have to change and change now, which builds massive urgency. And then if we're in B2C and it's a one call close, we're going to transition into our presentation and ask commitment questions and close. If we're in more of a B2B sell environment, we're going to transition into whatever our next step is by asking what are called micro commitment questions that lead to the bigger commitment of purchasing. That could be, if I sold SaaS, the next step demo. If I sold, let's say, I sold pools, you know, that's even B2C. It could be the next step proposal. If I'm selling cybersecurity to Wells Fargo, it could be the next step meeting the department head. So whatever the next step is, I'm asking micro commitment questions that get them to take smaller commitments that lead to the larger commitment of purchasing. So once I understood problem, consequence, how the solution solves, that's how everybody's like, how are you able to duplicate in every industry? Well, it's because of that formula.
It's just that. Yeah.
It's that simple. It's like a factor.
And that's so incredible and very helpful. I want to be respectful of your time. I know we got to get off here at the top of the hour. I do want to circle back just to the life question for you.
Yeah.
Big vision. Excuse me. How old are you? If I can ask.
I'm 46 now. I'm old.
46.
How old are you? God,
man, I hope that's not 46. I'm 29.
See, young guy over there.
Man, yeah, I hope so. I mean, I feel young, but I mean, I look at 46-year-olds and I'm like, I still feel like you're pretty young. Like, I don't want to feel old until I'm like 70, right? Like that. Yeah, that's why I feel like you can
still feel young. I go to CrossFit like.
Okay, there you go.
I'm not buff or anything. I just don't want to have a belly. You know,
that's me, man. I'm like
enough. You know.
Yep. Yep.
I'm not into. I know there's some intense people out there, and I love that. I'm more intense in like sales.
Yeah.
My intenseness right there.
Yep.
As far as go back to business, I'm going to come back to personal.
Yeah, so, like long-term personal for you. Yeah, what's that look like?
So we have everything forecasted out. You know, we're a company that is thinking not just 1 year ahead. We already have plans in process for 3 years to 5 years. So everything that decisions we make are to get us to where we want to be. So right now we have well over a million salespeople just on our list, not including social media.
Yep.
So a lot of people have come to us and like, hey, you should start a placement company. Well, there's some issues with the FTC on that. So we'll stay away from placement companies because a lot of people come from the high ticket space. They're like, you should start, we'll pay you. And like, not going to do that. Because if we place them with some entrepreneur that's selling whatever course, and then a year later they change their mind, that sales is going to blame us.
Yep.
And that hurts our brand.
Yep.
Eventually, I want to say, plans are on the books by 2027. We once have about 3 to 4 million salespeople on our list. We'll bring in the right structure and the right people to run as part of 7th Level, because 7th Level will always be sales training. But as part of 7th Level, a staffing agency where we staff those out to what we would consider safe long-term careers. Like, you know, a cybersecurity company wants 50 reps. A life insurance company wants 200 reps. You know, pest control company wants this. So more mainstream business, but we don't have the infrastructure yet to be able to handle that the way we want. So that is the next step plan. There's some other next steps in 2029 and 2030. I can't get into that yet, but that's where we're going as a company. Now, personal life, I've got 5 kids. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm divorced now. I got married when I was really, really young. So I have a 22-year-old that goes to college here at Arizona State. She's about to graduate. I have a 20-year-old that actually works for 7th Level, Quincy. And then I have an 18-year-old that lives out here. She goes to school at Mesa Community College. And then I have a 17-year-old son. And then I have a 5-year-old.
Wow. So I'm about to have my first in 2 weeks. So
congratulations.
That's crazy. Thank you. Yeah. Super excited. That's awesome though. 5 kids.
I got a plus. Yeah. I got the basketball team. So I do a lot of activities with my kids. We go on trips, you know, just things like that. That's what I'm really doing. Do stuff with employees here. We're kind of like a family, you know,
yeah.
We have 150 some people on staff. We only have like 25 in this office. We have about 25 in our Sydney, Australia office. The rest are virtual.
Okay. But
we're building an office space now where we're going to bring in probably about 80% of those people over the next 12
months. Cool. That's awesome. Well, Jeremy, I really appreciate your time. I have a couple rapid fire questions that I want to get to just here to wrap things up. Before I do that, where can people find, like, where would you send people, like, knowing the audience, like, they want to learn more about you, they want to buy your stuff, they want to give you money, they want to learn from you?
For your audience, I would say we'll give them some little nibbles first. So why don't you have them join one of our free Facebook groups, salesrevolution.pro. Let's send them there. Salesrevolution.pro. It's .pro.
Okay.
100,000 salespeople in that group. And we go live in there 2 to 3 times a week, different subject matter trainings, Q&As. They'll learn about kind of our methodology. So, I mean, we even have people that are like, I doubled my income from just your free lives.
That's awesome. See, heck yeah.
There we go. We don't even count those as testimonies. We only count client testimonies.
That's good to know.
I go on my YouTube channel and there's like, you know, one video I did and there's like 47 their testimonies. I'm like, well, none of them are clients. We can't count those.
Yeah.
So that's a good place to start. Salesrevolution.pro. If they want more advanced training, because that's, you know, there's not really, can't really get too advanced in a 30 minute live. They can just message me or somebody in there and somebody on my team will message them back training options. They can also go to barnesandnoble.com and purchase this is our Wall Street Journal bestsellers released about 4 months ago. It's a Barnes & Noble bestseller.
Ooh, all right.
Amazon bestseller. We sold a lot of these, but we have a big deal with Barnes & Noble. So you might be, and it's in most Barnes & Nobles across the nation, but I want you to buy it online because we have a deal with them. The more we sell online, the more they stock their shelves.
All right. So we'll link that down below online.
50 cents more. To buy this on Barnes & Noble or Amazon. So if I see anybody buy this on Amazon, even though I love Amazon. So send it to barnesandnoble.com.
Barnes & Noble, okay.
New model is selling. I co-authored this with Jerry Acuff. He owns a large sales consulting firm on the East Coast. He mainly specializes in the pharmaceutical industry. The top 15 pharmaceutical companies are his clients. We specialize in every industry, but this would be a good place to start too.
Cool. Okay, guys, we will link those down below. Make sure to go check out the book, the group. Appreciate that. All right, rapid fire questions. We just got 3 for you.
I'm so excited.
First is like, what has been like the coolest experience of your life?
Well, I'd say each kid born. I know that sounds cliche, but like each of my kids were born, it was like the most happiest time of my life.
Cool. Second question is, what's the biggest deal you've ever closed? Say, single transaction.
It was a $9 million deal when I sold debt relief services.
$9 million. That's super cool. Okay. Last question. We ask everybody this question. The first two are kind of custom, but this one is, you're at the end of your life and every single person that you have, you know, touched or helped, right, been called to serve in this life, they're going to forget everything that you have ever taught them or ever, you know, said to them. But you get to leave them with one final message or idea, and they will believe that to be 100% true and operate accordingly with it, right? And this could be personal, it could be business, it could be religious, it could be whatever. What is that one message that you want to leave behind to the world?
Can I copy a quote?
Sure.
Okay. So a billionaire mentor of mine that I worked for in my first company, in one meeting, this has stuck to me. It'll stick with me forever. Anytime you say one day I'm going to do something, or someday I'm going to do it, or someday it's going to be a better time, is the path that leads to nowhere.
Mm.
One day or someday I'm going to do it is the path that leads to nowhere. Now is the time. There will never be the right time. Now is the right time. So you acquire the right skills. You put in the work and acquire the knowledge and get results and then take action on that. One day is the path that leads to nowhere.
Amazing. That's really good. I appreciate that. Appreciate
it. Not even my quote. I stole it.
Listen, hey, that's fine. Whatever stucks with you. I appreciate it. Jeremy, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate you coming on. It was fun. We'll have to do it again soon. Thank you.
It was an honor being on your show, man. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you soon. Guys, that's all for today. We'll see you next time. Peace.